Coming up on this episode of The Social Hour, myself and guest host Tanya Hall of Twit, you might know her from Marketing Mavericks, will be talking to Chuck Hester, a LinkedIn expert. All that and a lot more coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and guest host Tanya Hall, episode 175, recorded Thursday, August 14th, 2014. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another fun-filled episode of The Social Hour from Twit World headquarters in Petaluma, California. I'm Sarah Lane, and this is the part of the show where Amber McCarthy would tell you where she was. Amber cannot be with us this week. However, we have a special treat. Tanya Hall, who is a Twit employee, host of Marketing Mavericks, and also product wrangler for Before You Buy, and booker, actually, for Tech News Today and Tech News Night. You're very busy.
I am.
Joining me on The Social Hour today.
Thank you.
Well, good to be here with you.
Very honored to be here, Sarah.
And you know, Tanya, I don't think that the two of us have ever done a... Well, I know that the two of us haven't done a social hour together, but not really many shows besides a couple of Tech News Todays back in the day.
Right.
But we have so much crossover content.
We do.
It's perfect. You're the perfect co-host.
I would agree.
Good. Good. Well, it's not just the two of us today, actually. We, as Amber mentioned last week, because she's actually quite a great booker for the social hour, we've been wanting to talk to somebody who is kind of a LinkedIn expert, because LinkedIn is, it can be a confusing network for many people, even though it's supposed to be really, really good for networking. And as promised, we do have an expert. His name is Chuck Hester, and he joins us now from North Carolina. Hello, Chuck.
Hey, how are you?
Very good. Now, you're the managing partner of something called the Infinity Alliance. What is that?
The Affinity Alliance is a loose confederation of experts in regards to email marketing, video, social media marketing, public relations. So we're a virtual agency. We have partners around the country.
Very cool. Now, what is your LinkedIn expertise affiliation? Why have you kind of gotten, why have you gone in that direction specifically?
I've been on LinkedIn close to 10 years. Started out with about 27 connections. I now have 13,000 direct connections on LinkedIn. I'm also written a book on LinkedIn called Linking In to Pay It Forward, and then coming up with a second book come the fall, spring of this coming year. And I teach LinkedIn. I do executive seminars on LinkedIn on how to use LinkedIn for business, media relations, and the like. Also host a podcast called Linked Conversations, which is on the FIR podcast network with Shel Holtz and Neville Hobson.
Of course, even though you told me Affinity with an A, I mistyped it to Infinity. We'll get that fixed momentarily.
No problem.
All right, so
I'm not Buzz Lightyear.
So. Right, I can't be the first person who's made that mistake. Yeah. But Affinity Alliance. All right, so Linked Conversations. You're the host of. Is it a podcast? What's the general content?
Right. It's a weekly podcast specifically on LinkedIn, but I broaden it to social media and marketing in general. First part of the hour, we talk about new LinkedIn news, whether it be annual report or new features that are out. Then the bulk of it is like conversation, literally a conversation with someone who uses LinkedIn for business or is involved with social media. And we've had everybody from Craig Newmark to Peter Shankman to the author for Longmire, Craig Johnson, on the show. And then we wrap it up with a quick LinkedIn tip at the end of the hour.
Lovely. Now, Tanya, we'll have you jump in as well. How much are you a regular LinkedIn user? How often are you going to your LinkedIn profile or others?
I use LinkedIn quite a bit. In fact, prior to joining Twit TV, I actually conducted a lot of Twit or LinkedIn seminars. I do a lot of coaching on LinkedIn. So I'm a pretty avid user of LinkedIn for marketing and business. And I would say today I'm on probably in the morning. I check it in the afternoon. I check it at night.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so you are a daily LinkedIn checker and sometimes multiple times a day.
Correct.
Chuck, would you say that seems common, unusual? I probably go to LinkedIn, honestly, once every few weeks.
And part of that reason is probably because I've turned off all my email notifications, which is not easy to do when you're talking about LinkedIn. But
it's easy to do if you know what you're doing, Zara. But I mean, you know, I tell most of my clients and the folks that I talk to, it's in speeches and seminars, 15 to 20 minutes a day on LinkedIn should be sufficient. And then 3 to 5 times a week is fine. You really have with any social media channel an issue where the channel can actually control you. And as you mentioned, one of the things that that we can do to get rid of that is turn off the email notifications. And if you know where to find those email notification settings, and it's quite easy to do.
I find that the email notifications are helpful. I mean, if you're in business to connect with other people in marketing, or maybe you make sales or whatever it is, and you're looking for leads or contacts, that's a good reason to use it. It's not necessarily a daily social media site for everybody. If that's not something you're doing, I can imagine it can be kind of annoying because you get notified every time somebody looks at your profile or wants to connect with you. But I find it really helpful. So I think it depends on your goals, right?
Certainly. Chuck, Tanya mentions notifications if somebody looks at your profile. I know that there are ways to turn that off, but that's something that Amber and I on this show have talked about repeatedly as sort of this weird thing where I can sometimes catch myself before I look at someone's profile and think, you know, out of context, they might see that I looked and that almost might give some sort of a message that I'm not trying to give, or maybe I'm trying to be shady. I don't know. Is LinkedIn really just hoping that we'll all upgrade to pro accounts and so that we have more power over these sorts of things?
Well, of course they do. I mean, that's where their revenue model is. Their revenue model is in three different areas. One is the marketing research that they do. One is the recruiting side and job seekers. And one is the memberships. And memberships is a good percentage of their revenue that they work with. However, what I will tell you and flip it over from what you talked about as far as notifications for me and for my business development clients is probably one of the best places to get new business. And yes. I've constantly gotten new business as a result. I mean, the best example I can give you today is, you know, someone checked my profile out. I sent him a quick email. He's a VP for a large recruiting firm. He sent me an email back when he accepted that invitation to connect and said, hey, I'm looking for somebody to do speeches for our company in regards to LinkedIn. That's why I was looking at your profile.
It's such a great way to get leads. I couldn't agree more. I've had a lot of business from that aspect as well. So most people are, I hear what Sarah's saying about, you kind of feel like it's a little like, you know, people know what you're
stalker-ish.
Looking at. Stalker. Yeah. I know. I think Amber's used that word before, too. But I actually think it's a great tool. And I often make the comparison, like you're at a networking event, and it's almost like you see somebody from across the room. You're kind of interested in what they do. You see that they work for a company that maybe you're interested in doing business with. And then you go across and actually introduce yourself. So, yeah, it could be a little stalkerish, but I actually check to see who's looked at my profile all the time. And so...
I guess you could think of it as just being assertive.
Right.
Being on top of the game. Chuck, I use LinkedIn. As I said, I'm not a daily user, or really even a weekly user, although, yeah, I've tried to, keep it as up-to-date as possible as of late. It is the only place where my resume lives, my CV is. That's, if anyone ever wants to know, I just send them to, you know, the little permalink for my LinkedIn resume. The company does, though, it has done a pretty good job of having daily updates of, you know, Tanya Hall got promoted, or, you know, Chuck changed jobs, or please rate this coworker that you said that you worked with in the past. So the site as a whole, I feel like, does a really good job of trying to keep everything fresh and keep you up to date on what everybody's doing. What are some tips you have for someone maybe a little bit like me who says, yeah, isn't LinkedIn just a place where I update my job?
Well, that's one of the myths that I usually explode when I'm talking about LinkedIn. LinkedIn is not an online resume. LinkedIn is, in fact, an online portfolio or an online business site. For my business, the Affinity Alliance, we do not actually have a website. We use my LinkedIn profile and a couple of company pages that we've got. So I really consider LinkedIn to be an online portfolio where people can see what blog posts I do, what information I've got, my 90 plus some on recommendations from clients. And, you know, if somebody's looking to hire me as a speaker or a marketing consultant, they can go on LinkedIn and look at my recommendations. So it's a really good place to do that. The other aspect of it is I usually counsel my clients that at least about once every 2 weeks or so, refresh your profile. Because as you mentioned, what happens is folks then get notifications that you've changed something. Even as simple as changing your profile picture, folks will get a chance to take a look. And it's kind of a nudge, if you will, as, oh, I should look at Tanya right now, or I should look at Sarah, so see what she's got going on. She changed job or she added something new. And trust me, when I do that, I have 60 to 70 some odd people message me back in regards to what's going on with a new job or a new project that I'm working on.
So I've got a question. I mean, this is a little bit controversial. I have a certain opinion about this, but I know that other people in kind of the marketing and LinkedIn space have a different opinion. Mm-hmm. What about people who offer you some sort of, recommendation and not necessarily click, you know, Tanya's great at social media, but actually a written recommendation? Would you say more or less of those?
The difference is endorsements versus recommendations. Endorsements are basically Facebook likes. But there's a wrinkle now, thanks to LinkedIn, in that they are saying that the more endorsements you have, the better search you are going to have within the LinkedIn platform. That being said, recommendations, as far as I'm concerned, are gold. And you really do not – I do not recommend anybody who I've not worked with, who I don't know, who I really can't – basically give a job reference, if you will, or a reference for a client reference to them. I won't write a recommendation. So I'm very careful in that regard.
There are people that I know, mostly who work in the technology field, but you know, this, I'm sure this blanket applies to a lot of other people who, as I mentioned, LinkedIn can be really aggressive with email notifications. I mean, I've turned off email notifications for LinkedIn 100 different times, and they find a way to like repackage them and then continue to send something to me. Although it does keep me thinking about the site, so it is effective and annoying at the same time. There are people who, kind of like people who hate Facebook, say LinkedIn is super obnoxious. I will not use it. I will figure out other ways to connect with people. Do you think there is any, I'm sort of setting you up here, is there any other way, really?
Good to know.
Is there any other way, really, without using LinkedIn at all, that you can achieve these same sort of connections that you're talking about online?
I have a 300 million person database with 13,000 direct connections. I have close to 15 to 20 million people I can connect with directly. In my estimation, there really is no better business to business, and they emphasize business, network platform available as far as LinkedIn is concerned. I've tried it on Facebook. I do it with Twitter to a certain extent. I'm on Google Plus. But I still go back to LinkedIn on a regular basis because it just makes a lot more sense. If I'm talking to somebody on LinkedIn, I'm looking to do business with that person.
Hmm. I would agree with you. I think, and again, your use for LinkedIn is different than maybe somebody else. So I could see that. Sure. Facebook notifications to me are incredibly annoying. I hate them. Mm-hmm. But LinkedIn, it's a great reminder. I'm like, oh, yeah, I should check that out. Or I should go look at so-and-so, or whether it's a guest. I mean, I will say I've actually got a guest for my show prior to coming to TWIT from LinkedIn. That was Event Surf, actually, with Google. I mean, he hates LinkedIn, but they do answer. So people, it is
Why
a way to
Why does he hate
people.
LinkedIn?
But for the same reason that you probably hate it. He probably gets a zillion people want to connect with him. Mm. He's not really interested in it. But you know what? I was able to get through on LinkedIn, where there are so many other sites that you're inundated with people trying to reach you, or emails or messages or DMs. And I think LinkedIn can be a unique way, maybe it's the notifications, of getting in front of somebody that might be really difficult to get in front of.
I think it walks an interesting line between social. There is absolutely a social network component to LinkedIn,
right.
But it is, you know, it's in a professional sense. Yes. I mean, I'm not chatting
absolutely.
With friends through LinkedIn.
It's very professional.
There's something else going on.
In fact, I'm glad that you pointed that out, because I don't know how you feel about this, Chuck, but I feel like when people get a little too personal on LinkedIn and they're sending out things that I'm not interested in a very personal way, I find it a little uncomfortable. I don't want to have personal conversations with people on that platform.
As a social media marketing consultant, I always talk to my clients about what message are they trying to get across, what audience are they trying to reach, and depending on the audience is where I will put them, whether it be Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, for instance. I've got an artist, my wife is an artist, and she uses Pinterest on a regular basis. It makes more sense for her. She would never post her paintings on a LinkedIn notification in a group. It just does not make sense for her to do something like that. So yes, it is definitely a professional network, and it is a business network, and it does an excellent job of what it does.
Chuck, you mentioned that you do a lot of consulting for social media. There are a lot of people who watch the show who email us and kind of say, is that a real job? I'd like to get into that. I feel like I know what I'm doing. What kind of reputation do I need to have before people take me seriously? For somebody who's like, this sounds like a great job for me, because I think a lot of people sometimes can sort of poo-poo that title, like, social media, that's, it's not rocket science. Anybody could do it. There is a technique, though, isn't there?
Oh, there absolutely is. And, I, and I'm a marketing consultant first, and I use social media as a channel for, you know, the particular marketing work that I do. As a matter of fact, if you guys take a look at my profile and look at Beware the Nexperts, that was my last blog on LinkedIn in regards to folks who, hey, I've been on Facebook since I was in high school. Therefore, I'm a Facebook consultant. I know it better than anybody else. They're going to blow out rather quickly. So yeah, there is a lot of technique to, you know, witness the folks like Brian Solis or Scott Monty, whoever it may be, you know, Shell and Shell is the Shells, if you will, Shell Israel and Shell, Shell Holtz. We have been marketing folks for a long, long time. We know what we're talking about. And social media for us is just another marketing channel. It is not the be all end all. And that's where you start and end.
Chuck Hester is the managing partner of the Affinity Alliance and also the host of Linked Conversations. For anybody who's interested in that show, where can they find it?
You can go to iTunes and just type in Linked Conversations or the FI Network, or you can go to forimmediaterelease.biz and you can find us there as well.
And at Chuck Hester on Twitter, and of course, of course, his profile on LinkedIn as well. Thanks so much for joining us, Chuck, all the way from North Carolina on the Social Hour today.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Nice to see you, Tanya and Sarah.
Nice to see you too, Chuck, and have a great weekend.
All right. Take care.
Quick reminder that we record the Social Hour live on Thursdays right between Know How and Coding 101. It's a lovely little spot at about noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern. And as I mentioned earlier in the show, Amber is off this week, but Tanya Hall is joining me.
Thank you so much.
Well, of course. Now, I want to not to put you on the spot, but I want to talk just a little bit about, you know, kind of your social background. Marketing Mavericks is a show that's fairly new here on the TWiT Network. It records on Mondays right after Tech News Tonight.
It does.
About 4:30 p.m. Pacific.
Yes, we target 4:30, but, you know, sometimes
kind of depends on when I wrap up.
When you've got lots of news to share, we run a little late.
Exactly. So, I mean, what is the marketing and social really overlap in many ways?
They do.
What do you think, you know, for the most part, you're wanting to focus on that show?
Well, so on that show, we do talk about everything from marketing. And when you talk about social, typically is a part of a much bigger marketing objective. So it isn't just social. And social is a mix of everything that you're trying to do. Branding, you know, any sort of components that go into marketing your business or branding your business. We also talk about customer service. For example, last week, we talked a lot about Comcast and Comcast Cares and how call centers are reacting. So we have people come on that maybe work for a technology company who helps call centers understand the customer better, a little bit of everything.
And you mentioned marketing and social, and Amber is always really good at, she's always the one who comes up with like the social media marketing blunder of the week. Because there always is one.
Yes.
Why is it so hard for some companies? Is it because they're too big? Is it because they're too stodgy, or they're too much of a legacy company and they don't understand how to be nimble and work with social? Why do so many companies get it wrong, you think?
I think, so I will say that that's a really complicated, it's like saying, why is this food taste bad? I mean, so there's, you really have to look at a lot of different variables. I think that it depends on the leadership sometimes. I think it's not hiring the right people. You know, Chuck mentioned, you asked him a question about social media and becoming a social media person. I think when it comes to social media specifically, businesses, big brands as well, tend to say, well, let's hire the intern. Let's get somebody in here. I always say, this is the person that's the face of your company. And if you want an intern to be speaking for your entire organization, then that's what you should do. Or maybe you should get somebody with a lot more experience who understands all aspects of marketing. You know, there's been a lot of things that we're going to talk about this coming Monday that have happened over the last week. OnePlus is a great example where, you know, there's a big outlash here in the United States about this campaign that they put forward when really that's more of a global campaign, and you have to look at each culture. So again, when you look at why mistakes are made, it could be a cultural problem within the organization. I think with Comcast, they're big, and so we talked a lot about Comcast Cares because they're getting a lot of attention. Are there much, much smaller companies who have similar issues? There are, but you know, you just have to dissect each. You have to look at it as okay, what went wrong? What was broken here? Was it something in the technical area? Was it something in customer service? Mm. Was it in marketing? Was it leadership? Was it a top-down issue? Was it hiring the wrong people? So it's complicated.
You know, by the way, and we're not going to talk about it at length because they're going to talk about it on Marketing Mavericks on Monday, but the OnePlus issue is a very interesting one. We mentioned it on TN2 the other day. Had to do with a contest and nudity and just
well, and that's how it was perceived, right? Yeah. But I don't think that's how, you know, it's funny because our, you know, Tony here at Twit was talking about it from a cultural perspective, and that they put forth this campaign. And here's where I think typically when you have, especially a startup, you know, and I've worked with a lot of startups, my background is marketing and customer care and sales training, and that's, you know, a part of this entire picture. And what I think when you look at startups specifically, these are really great engineers potentially. Maybe they're really great at creating something, but they're not necessarily marketers or they're not necessarily salespeople. And so they don't think about some of the pitfalls and obstacles that come across when you launch a campaign. And I think that when they launched this campaign, which they've completely taken down, by the way, they really probably didn't realize the consequence of how people might perceive the campaign. And we see that a lot in marketing and PR as well. You know, Edelman Digital. I don't know if you have, you know, posted something about the Robin Williams passing as being an opportunity. Edelman is one of the largest PR companies in the world, and this went viral on social media in the last couple of days. So it doesn't matter the size of your organization, whether you're a startup or a bigger business, you can make mistakes.
You know, okay, that's an interesting segue into our next story, because I don't really want to talk about the outpouring of heartfelt, whatever it is, about Robin Williams passing. Right? However, I mean, my social network, not just Twitter, not just Facebook, kind of wherever, has been completely flooded. It's absolutely terrible thing. That aside, I do want to talk about something on the Twitter side specifically. This is a story that comes from the Washington Post, although it was basically recorded in a lot of places. Robin Williams has children. His daughter, Zelda Williams, has been prolific on Twitter. She is involved with a variety of charity organizations that her dad was as well. And kind of did this whole, okay, bye Twitter, I can't take it anymore, and apparently felt extremely harassed by not one or two, but a variety of Twitter accounts. That, you know, the specific reason for that aside, this is a person that was being harassed on a network, and that should not be tolerated. Well, Del Harvey, who is Twitter's vice president of trust and safety, said in response to this, because she was pretty public about the fact that she was outie, says, "We will not tolerate abuse of this nature on Twitter. We have suspended a number of accounts related to this issue for violating our rules, and we're in the process of evaluating how we can further improve our policies to better handle tragic situations like this one. This includes expanding our policies regarding self-harm and private information, and improving support for family members of deceased users." This particular article goes on to highlight a couple other instances with other people who felt that the company was not listening to them. You know, you block somebody, you report for spam, you can report abuse, but if it doesn't get dealt with right away, you can still be targeted. Twitter's a pretty big company. In fact, their headquarters are right down the street from where I live. I mean, it's a big company. A lot of people work at Twitter now. Right. It's not just a few engineers in a room anymore. They've got large departments of people working on the social media side and outreach. Do you think they have to do a better job, but should they have been doing a better job about this a long time ago? These issues are constant.
They should have. And I think this actually opens up our eyes to, you know, why isn't Twitter better at customer service, whether it's somebody impersonating you. You know, I had somebody send a link to me that somebody had created a Twitter account that was using my picture, my profile information, but it wasn't me. And they were tweeting about a lot of political issues that I wasn't interested in. And I reported to Twitter. The account never got removed. And finally, I think a year later, they were taken down. But, you know, this was something that, you know, they didn't take care of when they could have. And it is, to your point, Sarah, this isn't a small company. This is a company that could invest a little bit more in listening, to the users, being more socially active on Twitter, but to see these things for themselves. There's a lot of tools they can use to find out what's happening and when people are being bullied. They could potentially even step in before the user that's being bullied has said anything, but they don't do that, and it does take a while for them. They say they want to be more responsive, but we'll see.
Yeah, there was some time, and this is not that recently, there was a time where, I still know people who work at Twitter, but it was still sort of a small company. It's like, if you wanted something done, you would ping your friend. You know, let me DM my friend that works at Twitter and see if I can get you verified, that sort of thing.
Right.
You know, it doesn't really work like that anymore. There's red tape. It's a corporation. There's ladders and channels and that sort of thing. But again, when you have such direct access to people, the way that Twitter is. And Leo and I were just talking about this the other day, because he's like, somebody says something to me that's just even a little off, I just block them, because I never want to feel that negative energy from that particular person again.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of works, but it's cumbersome. And yeah, if you don't feel like a company is listening, yeah, I don't know what that means. Do they need to figure out a better automated response? Just when if you're sending in some sort of a note that something bad has happened. I'm not exactly sure what the answer is, but you read stories like this, and certainly Zelda Williams is perhaps more high profile than the average person who feels that they're being harassed, but the harassment is the same. It can be anyway, so...
I would agree. And I would agree with you that you can block people. And on a personal level, it feels better, but it's still happening and other people are hearing it. So then there's also, you know, reputation management and that sort of issue where and then you might run into, you know, do we really want to let people have the freedom to say what they want? So there's a lot to consider. But I do think they could get better at listening and jumping in and being more proactive on some of those situations.
Well, moving on to this is an area of the internet that isn't my favorite. How often do you look up something, you know, maybe it's like how to change a tire or bake a cake or some sort of a thing, and then you end up with an ask.com response that's like the top of the Google search?
I mean,
that happens to me every day.
I know.
And sometimes I get the answer I'm looking for, but I'm never, like, happy to hang out on ask.com at all.
Nobody is.
No.
Nobody.
It's just you know, they've got SEO down. I'll give them that. Ask.com has bought AskFM, which, despite the names, is totally different, really. AskFM got a lot of attention, gosh, I guess it was last year now, from stories of teens bullying other teens. It's an anonymous kind of Q&A network that is not unlike what Formspring used to be like a few years ago. Formspring does not exist anymore, or at least last I checked. AskFM, it's the sort of thing where I could ask you something and you wouldn't know who it was, and very popular with the younger set, you know, the kids under 18 years old. And, you know, really kind of highlighted this, oh, there's a bullying issue online. Anonymous can equal nasty, this specific network, and obviously the particular age group had a lot to do with it. Ask.com buying AskFM, I mean, how... I don't know. I don't know how familiar you are with this network. I haven't hung out there in quite a while, but...
You're a little over 18, but just barely.
Yeah, but I mean, at one point I thought Formspring was really fun.
Right.
Until I realized, oh, when people can ask me things anonymously, it's like a cesspool.
Right.
It's the bottom of the barrel. It's truly the lowest common denominator of stuff, because you're just kind of saying, it's almost like just like yelling in a chat room. It's very juvenile. What does Ask.com want with AskFM?
I don't know. That's a great question. And I like your pointing out the anonymous and being able to, the anonymity of the internet, right? I personally am not a big fan of anonymity in that respect. I mean, I don't want to have conversations with people. I don't I don't even like people going to my LinkedIn profile who are anonymous, because it's like, you know, I don't mind connecting with you. Don't be anonymous about it. Just come out and tell me that you want to talk about something. As far as targeting the younger set being anonymous, I don't really know what their goal is. And I looked through this. I'm not super familiar, and I'm barely above 18, too. So just me, like, using the site, I'm not, you know, user-friendly with it. But I was reading over this when I saw this in the rundown, and I thought, well, this is interesting. What are they trying to accomplish? I don't know.
Well, according to Doug Leeds, who is the CEO of Ask.com, AskFM has 180 million regular monthly users, nothing to sniff at, particularly strong appeal to a highly desirable young age demographic. 40% of AskFM's users are younger than 18. I would have thought that the percentage was higher, by the way. Most of the site's users are in the U.S., but apparently also a pretty large presence in Europe, Russia, and Brazil. Always interesting to see how some of these social networks, Tanya, you say, I'm not super familiar, and they really take off in certain countries. And sometimes it makes sense, and sometimes there's really no rhyme or reason. It's just, you know, is my best friend using this network? Then I'm using this network. Why do people use WeChat instead of, what's the other one? I can't keep them straight anymore.
Snap?
No. The one that Facebook bought. WeChat's the other one. Facebook bought... Anyway.
Chat?
I think I'm making my own point, right? It's like...
Exactly.
Why do some of them take off in certain markets and others don't? Hard to say.
Well, and I, you know, one of the interesting things is that when you look at where you're trying to target...
WhatsApp. Thank you, Sandman in chat.
Thank you.
WhatsApp versus WeChat. They're the same thing. Anyway.
You're making her point. I think, you went back to who they're trying to target. And I would really want to look at what their end game is. What are they trying to do to get them there? And if they see that they really want to target users in Russia, you know, that's their real goal, then what are they doing? How are they getting in front of people? What does their SEO look like? How are they promoting it? Who are the users they're getting to start off to start the trend? Where are they promoting it on social sites? How are they getting the initial onslaught of users to start this kind of viral activity of, oh, I want to sign up because my friend's on there, you know? I don't know. I mean, again, I'm not super familiar with this, but also not a big fan of anonymity. So,
sorry, I was just trying to plug in my computer so that you could see this next. I've got this new MacBook Pro, and it's
I know she's shutting off.
I don't know
off.
What all my inputs
here
do
I have
anymore.
I love my computer, by the way.
There
but it is so
go.
Big next to Sarah's pretty new little.
Yeah, just to go completely off topic for a moment. What's happening over here? Why is your computer so large? And why do you have a mouse?
I like big screens, and I cannot lie.
Okay.
Hey, look at this, though. You were commenting on the bedazzled. I have to thank Liz, who used to be here, for giving me that when I first started. So it's very pretty. Can you see that?
I like it.
And a little Vanna moment.
Yeah, it's good. It's good stuff.
We didn't even know Vanna.
And I managed to... Gosh, I am just a complete mess right now. I don't even know. Like, my entire computer has just gone off the deep end.
And this is your first day using it?
Well, I transferred everything over from my Air last night.
Okay.
Okay, so moving on, if we can. This is actually kind of an interesting story. I read it on TechCrunch earlier this morning, that there is a new app, which I'm always trying to pay attention to, called Spring, which could be thought of as the Instagram for shopping. If you go to shopspring.com, you get a little bit more information about what the deal is. So, okay, you've got basically a... product-based, yeah, Anthony, if you scroll down a little bit, it'll kind of walk you through. You've got products where you can see how much the product costs, right? You can get product details. You can like it. You can, of course, send that product to somebody else. You get more information about, I don't know, what certain products are being offered by stores, that sort of thing. Get information. It's kind of one-stop buying process type thing. Okay, well, the whole, like, Instagram for X is a little bit tired as far as phrases go. But what do you think about this, the idea that, you know, we've always said here on the Social Hour that Instagram works so well because it's, like, it's so hyper-focused.
Right.
Besides the fact that they've introduced some, you know, videos and they've changed a few filters here and there.
Right.
It's really the same experience that it was on day one. You're looking at people's mm-hmm. pictures, and for the most part, people try to go the extra mile to make things artsy or, right. you know, look like they're good photographers type thing.
Right.
For products, which are much less like, oh, let me just take a photo on the street. It's mm-hmm. this is more of a curated sense that looks like Instagram. Would you use this? Do you like the idea of shopping via an app?
Okay, so I have some mixed feelings about this up front. First off, I'm just going to come out and say and own it. I love Pinterest.
Okay.
And
you and many other people.
Me and many other, many 80% millions of women, other I think, in the United States. 20% in the United States. 80% are women in general. I do love Pinterest. But here's the flip side of that. If this is truly a Pinterest for shopping, I could be in really big trouble. And I think a lot of people could, because it automatically saves your credit card information.
Yeah.
So unlike being able to go to like an Overstock.com or Sierra Trading Post or whatever it is your online retail store is, a retail outlet, and you put things in your shopping cart, you're not necessarily buying them right away. It's they make it a little bit more cumbersome to buy, which is actually good. In Pinterest, I'm just pretend shopping, right? So I'm constantly putting things in my virtual shopping cart, whether
sure.
it's, you know, a sofa or a jacket or a pair of shoes or a clutch. I don't have to buy it right then. I think this could be kind of dangerous because
it's, yeah, it's a little bit less of that scrapbook and more of like,
it's
I
more
want
of
that.
A, I just bought something. Oops, that was $1,000. Ding, you know, and right? I mean,
it was the app. It was too easy.
Blame it on the app.
Yeah, I was duped. I need a new
so that's
card.
My only concern is kind of what. There are both high-end and low-end brands on here right now, mostly high-end.
Yeah.
But you have like a Warby Parker who's on here, so that's not as dangerous. But I don't know. I think I have mixed feelings. So
you mentioned that you like Pinterest because you like it, but in part because you can pin things and mm-hmm. you don't necessarily have to get the checkbook out, right?
That's right.
Like anybody uses checkbooks anymore, but you know what I mean. Whatever. I saw somebody use that at that grocery store the other day, and I was like, come on. We got places to be.
And you notice,
seriously.
I have to say, when somebody gets ready to write a check, have you noticed they don't even start writing the check until after the process? At least put the company you're going to write into.
Yeah, right.
Get the checkbook out yeah. of your purse.
You can do everything but the total, Grandma. Come on.
I hate that.
You think I got all day?
We're on a checkbook rant. Hashtag checkbook.
Horrible. This is some sort of like, we're living in like the age of immediacy right now. If this is the sort of thing that, you know.
Do you even have a checkbook? Do you even own a checkbook?
Yeah, I mean, there's one in a box somewhere. When's the last time I ever had to write a check?
I don't know.
It just doesn't happen. You know, I pay my landlord through my online
banking.
Exactly.
And that's legitimate.
A better way to be social. To ask you, though, so I did have my point, and I do have one, is that you mentioned that Pinterest doesn't have to be about buying things.
Right.
But I think Pinterest really wants to be about buying
they
things.
They do, and they're getting better. But I like the idea, though, that I can go on and put all kinds of things in my shopping cart, if you will, that I might even want to go back to, and I don't have to buy it right away. They are getting better at actually, in fact, one of the things, and I think you've got this later, but is they are getting better at helping connect people. They haven't really been a social platform. They've been more of a, I would just say a shopping basket platform,
sure.
and a pin board, if you will.
We talked last week that they introduced private messaging.
Yes.
So you and I could discuss that clutch.
Yes.
Within the privacy of our own conversation that doesn't have to be comments that everyone else is seeing, which is messaging is every site has to do that, apparently.
Which I think is good if you're planning a party or you talked about, I think, last week, you know, decorating your home and you want to have a conversation with, you know, your interior decorator, or maybe you're planning a wedding and you want your bridesmaids or your wedding planner to be on there. Personally, I don't really want to talk to people on Pinterest. I kind of like the fact that nobody's going to talk to me, but I see a certain use for it, and I think it could be really handy. I just like to pin stuff.
Okay. And there you are, Tanya Hall on Pinterest. Boy, you really do. You've taken it seriously. You're actually quite organized. You make me look like a terrible Pinterest user. The truth is, animal antics? Please
see,
click on
why
that.
Why aren't you following me?
Please click on that. Well, because, you know why? Because, oh, see, I love, oh my gosh. You're like my dream Pinterest user. Look at this.
Oh,
holy crap.
I know.
This is good. See, okay, so this, yeah, I love it. Look at the birds. Is that really a bird? Like a bird on the right hand side.
I know. Isn't that beautiful?
Looks like somebody painted him.
I know. God is really, or whoever, you know.
Okay, see, wait, and you're not going to buy the bird. You're just pinning it.
This I just like it.
You're collecting stuff.
It's an inspiration potentially for something. It's something I like. It's funny, I was talking to somebody last week, and I think one thing that Pinterest can do for businesses or brands or even on a personal level is you can go to somebody's Pinterest board. We're so on a Pinterest tangent, but I love that. Thank you for inviting me, by the way.
I'm glad that you're here because I'm sort of like, Pinterest, okay.
But see what you're missing?
Yeah, now I do.
One of the things, if you go to my Pinterest board, I think of Pinterest as the person that you want to be. I want to be really good at DIY kind of stuff. I want to make this meal, or I really like these animals. And you can actually go to somebody's Pinterest board and boards in general, their page. And I think you really learn a lot about that person that you might not know otherwise. So how that works for business is that I could go to look at some people on Pinterest that I may be interested in targeting for my products. And I could see, wow, this person's really into X. Maybe we should incorporate somehow that into our product, or that we approach them, or maybe where we're marketing to them. I think there's a lot of opportunity. I'm a little addicted to Pinterest, though. I might be the exception.
The whole using Pinterest as, you know, it in a business sense is nothing that I've never really tried that. I have told the story about how a year and some change ago, I was trying to, like, redecorate my apartment, and I had an expert, she was an interior designer, helping me, and she would pin stuff into a board that was, you know, it was like my address.
Right.
Because she had a bunch of different clients, and I'd go and I'd, you know, say, I like this, or no, I wouldn't have those pillows or that sort of thing. That worked really well for very specific projects.
Exactly.
I do think that there are, you know, people that I know at IRL in real life that I've kind of looked at their Pinterest page and been like, I had no idea she liked motorcycles. You do kind of get a sense sometimes, even someone that you know really well, of, oh, this is the side of them that I'm kind of looking into their imagination part of their mind.
Exactly. And I think, you know, let's look at fashion, for example. I think if I was really wanting to target somebody and I really wanted to understand the things they were interested in, I would say, what kinds of things are they pinning? What is it else that they like? Animals, for example. You know, I already knew that about you, but I might go to your Pinterest board and find out she also has a Harley. And and she really is into, she doesn't like rice.
Let's be honest, my Pinterest board is really bad.
Oh, is that Sarah?
I pin entertainment consoles because I like to think about televisions.
I have a rug like that.
Yeah. That actually is a cat scratcher that looks like a DJ, like a DJ turntable. And I now own that. That's something that I actually found on Pinterest and was like, I have to have it. It will be mine. And now it is.
See?
So there you go.
Pinterest
But no, I really don't. This is my Pinterest. But look at this. It's like, I'm not even trying. I'm just not trying.
You need to follow me.
I'm going to. I get some tips, see? I knew I wanted you on the show for a reason, Tanya.
It is about time.
Speaking of the show, it's about time to wrap up this episode of The Social Hour. Before we do, though, I want to remind you how you can keep in touch with us. You can give us suggestions for guests, like Chuck. Hey, I'm not a LinkedIn expert by any means. You are definitely using LinkedIn. Chuck lives LinkedIn. It was really nice to talk to him, get a little bit of a sense of somebody, how they are actually specifically using it for business and to connect with people in a very specific way. You can write us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. You can leave us a voicemail at 2626 SOCIAL. 2626 Social is our Google voicemail inbox. You can leave us a message. No one will answer. You can record a video. You can upload it somewhere and send us the link if there's something that you'd like us to play in the show that you think is relevant. Again, reminder that we record the show Thursdays at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern, between Know How and Coding 101 if you like to watch live. But you can always go to twit.tv/TSH. That is where all of our show archives live. That's where our subscription links are to subscribe to the audio or video portion of the podcast. A lot of you say, hey, we'd love to look at you guys, but I drive to and from work and I can only listen. That is fine. We make it as easy as possible for you to enjoy the show week after week. Tanya Hall, thanks so much for sitting in for Amber this week. This was a ton of fun, and I hope you will come back again.
Thank you. I appreciate being here. I mean, it's fun to talk about Pinterest and LinkedIn.
Exactly. I know. It's like the show. We're getting paid to do this. What? So thanks so much for watching and listening, everybody, and we will see you next week on The Social Hour.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.